Hello and welcome to another edition of the Ludic Insights podcast. This series explores themes and topics relating to all things digital and digital's impact on our societies, leadership, and ways of getting things done. My name is Paul Ashcroft, one of the founders of the Ludic Group and co-author of the book Alive, Digital Humans and Their Organizations, available on Amazon, Kindle, and at all good bookstores. This edition is focused on the future of consulting. As ever, I'm joined today with my co-author, Garrick Jones.
Hello.
And we're delighted to be joined by Paul Connolly, recently Deputy CEO and Think Tank Director of the Management Consultancies Association, and one of the leading experts on the consulting market. Welcome, Paul.
Hello.
So we're going to talk today about the future of consulting, and specifically the future of management consulting. A question, Paul, see what you think to this. Does consulting have a future?
I think it does, but it's going to have to be pretty different, at least to its immediate past. Digital is hugely disrupting and changing everything across the economy. How value is created, what constitutes a product, how people consume. And if consulting, which is essentially an advisory service to business, to the public sector, is to remain relevant, then it must grasp those changing dynamics and continue to create value for all sectors of the economy in new and improved digital ways.
Are you seeing that at the moment? Are these firms changing and keeping up with the times?
I think quite a lot of them are, but in very different and varied ways. There are those who are trying to engage directly with digital as a means of how they create value for themselves. There are others who have remained resolutely wedded to their particular area of expertise, but are starting to recognize that they can't ignore digital, so are cultivating new digital best friends across their ecosystems.
Garrick, we, as you know, wrote in the book all about the future of consulting and our view and our model of this. What do you think is the future of consulting?
Well, as you know, I've got quite strong opinions about this, having been in consulting for at least 30 years now. I've seen quite a number of changes go through and come through. I saw the launch of the process consulting movement, which really shifted things. I saw the launch of PowerPoint, which really shifted things. And then I saw the movement towards accelerated solutions in environments and starting to bring people in, which predated the internet, and bringing lots of people together to make massive decision-making in one place, research-based and so on. That was a huge movement. And then, of course, the internet had a huge impact as we started to see things shift. I mean, I remember working as a consultant and having huge questions about whether we could take emails which came from people outside of the organization. Of course, that didn't last long, but things have changed so rapidly, and now we've moved into the digital era, and there's no doubt that this is an epoch that is shifting not only the way, as you say, people consult, but also the way the value is made. When it comes to the business model of consulting, I think that is under huge strain. I mean, whether it's small to medium consultants, would you agree with me, or very, very large consultancies, this whole shift is a rush to the bottom, I think, in terms of margins. The ability to put large groups of people on global programs is really becoming irrelevant these days. And the ability to make money, and serious money, in the consulting world is becoming more and more difficult. It's sort of everybody has access to information, everybody has access to expertise, and the idea of these large houses with specific expertise coming in, telling you the solution, taking you through a process to make that happen, and then leaving somehow, I think is over.
I think there's a lot of truth in that, but I actually think the dynamics for consulting, if they're properly engaged with, are very exciting. I think one of the characteristics of that first wave of consulting digitization, which you described there, Garrick, is that it produced some incredibly boring consulting. You know, armies of spreadsheet jockeys poring over data. And that displaced, I think, the early incarnation of consulting, which was hired brains being imaginative about business problems. Well, I think digital has the potential to be a back to the future moment for consulting. There will plainly be a lot of new digital capabilities, which will be able to do far more analytics, far more even program management on the basis of real-time data than human beings are able to do. But the bit which I think consulting will re-engage with is the creative, the diplomatic, the client serving, the judgments which only human beings can really make about the value of these digital deployments. And properly engaged with, that's exciting. I think you're right, though. If a firm has been overly reliant on big scale analytical offerings, which previously took 200 people per jurisdiction across the globe, which can now be done by 8 people and one application for the entire world, then they're going to have to do something different going forward. Clients will say, if I want bog standard analytics, I can get that very cheaply now. But if I want insight, a real value creation in a shared autonomy model in which human insight sits alongside some of that digital capability, then that will require, I think, both a new model of consulting, but paradoxically, the reinvention of what consulting used to be.
That's right. And then there's also the idea of digital consulting, which is not only about digital content and enabling organizations to become digital, but it's also the use of digital tools to enable the consulting process itself, which is essentially a transformation process or an ability to take in data, process that data, and apply it in an effective manner somewhere it adds value.
Absolutely. And I think it's also about consultants helping their clients make appropriate digital judgment.
Yeah.
I think many business leaders across even large organizations are still at the stage in their understanding of digital and digital disruption that they know they should be doing something, and they see many of their competitors doing something interesting. And the newspapers they read tell them that they should be digitized. Mm. But actually, in terms of digital savvy and digital nous, their own teenage children are miles ahead.
Isn't that true?
So what they need is someone who can start to decode for them which digital commitments they should be making, which investments, the ones that really create value for them. And actually, consulting has a really important role there because it's likely to be independent of the big vendors of that capability, so can actually make dispassionate judgments on behalf of clients about which capabilities they should be committing to.
I'm smiling because it's amazing. Every time we do these podcasts, I think of an example of Paul's son, Ben, who's 10 years old and is living in a digital world far ahead of us. You know, we come home, we see him coding, I visit, and he's making, you know, digital things. I mean, it's astonishing. The same thing is happening in consultancy. There is a new generation abroad who used to being digital natives. I'm not sure I like that term, but digital, they're online, they live, they inhabit the digital sphere, and that's how they're processing the world. Consulting has to respond to that. I make the distinction, and we certainly do in the book, between content and process, or the what and the how. And the thing about consulting 4.0 or the new age of consulting, we think that instead of groups of experts coming in and giving you expertise and telling you what to do, we think the big thing about the new age is people doing it themselves. Organizations collaborating, co-authoring, and transforming themselves. But consulting is about enabling that to happen, providing platforms that to happen, and providing expertise where it's needed in a kind of plug-and-play situation. So your expert might come in for a couple of hours in a very specific moment and work with a group of people online to make the decisions needed. Other experts might come and help you shift the organization and change it and collaborate and engage and make it fun and really shift the game. But it's, again, in a sort of plug-and-play mode. The orchestration of all of this, we think, is being done online, we think, with new platforms. Which it's almost turning the philosophy of consulting upside down.
I think that's very exciting, though, isn't it? Because those people who are coming in that almost coaching capacity
yeah.
are helping empower people to make effective digital judgments going forward.
Yeah.
And I like the fact that that challenges one of the basic presumptions of consulting, which is overdue challenge, which is particularly in the strategic sphere, a presumption of clairvoyance.
Yeah.
I can tell you what the future is going to be like and what you must do.
That's right.
Now, anyone who claims that in the digital age is a snake oil salesperson because we simply don't know what's going to happen next week.
That's right.
But if you're able to guide, if you're able to deploy your own experience and expertise to help others make richer, fuller, and more enlightened judgments as to what they should do, surely that is a proper role for a consultant. It's just one that might have gone missing somewhere along the line.
Paul and I write about and are very passionate about creativity, design thinking, bringing the creative into the consulting sphere and making things as enjoyable and fun and human as possible. But we always react to the jazz hands phenomenon. We cannot stand all of this kind of nonsense, you know, improvised theatre in some respect. There's a place for it, but I don't think that place is necessarily in business every day. Also, you know, bringing your true self into the business world. Well, yes, you want that in relationship to people, but not every day if you're making effective value decisions, if you know what I mean. I think it's a little bit overdone. But what we do think is, which I really relate to when you're talking about, is the commitment to data. And the commitment to understanding what's going on in the real world and how you connect with that, both at a kind of data-driven level, but also at a kind of people, human level, because these things go on dynamically, and I think we're coming to understand that digitally, that it's not only about the automaton, it's not only about being human, it's about everything in between. I think that is also part of the new kind of consulting, that we have a respect for data, very large data sets, and how we engage with what the real is telling us. Again, new tools, new apps, new ways of looking at things, put in the hands of people who have to make the change themselves.
Jazz hands notwithstanding, yes. though, Garrick, I think the first word you used there was creativity.
Yeah.
And I think that's got far-reaching implications, not just for consulting, but for the whole economy. If you look at how policymakers react to the fact that we're moving into a digital age, it's incredibly clunky. They say,
Very badly, I think.
Absolutely. We're going to have loads more machines, so we need loads more STEM graduates. Well, kinda.
Yeah.
But, you know, unemployment is very high amongst science graduates.
Right.
What we tend in this country to specialize very early, and we create terrible generalists as a result.
Yeah.
Scientists who end up being in sales later, people from humanities backgrounds who end up dictating the technological policy of the UK when they are treasury officials in the future.
Yes.
I think what we will see is a need for people who have sufficient digital savvy that they can make, that they know what they're talking about, but who are fundamentally creative, entrepreneurial, problem-solving, engaged in, you know, team working capability, and that asks really deep questions of our education system.
This might be a little trite, but one of the things I heard recently, I like STEM, you know, science, technology,
absolutely.
Engineering, yeah. maths, but you need the arts. And if you put the arts into STEM, you get STEAM.
I like that.
You like it?
I like that. As long as you can still see in the room.
Exactly. So that's the thing. I mean, you have to have the arts. Why? Because the way of appropriating all this data, the way of taking it, synthesizing it, and doing interesting things with it is fundamentally a creative act. And the arts teach us that. They also teach us to disrupt our view of looking at things and reevaluate how we're looking at things. These are fundamental skills in the digital world.
The example I always come back to is the sort of first wave of disruption in digital produced these incredible syntheses. And one that's always springs to mind for me is animation. For the best part of a century, animators drew their cartoons and filmed them sequentially, frame by frame. Now all that's done through computer capabilities,
yes.
but they still need interesting and creative stories.
That's right.
Or no one will watch the films.
That's right. Content is king.
Paul, do you see change in the dynamic in the market for consulting? Is there more opportunity for small and medium-sized businesses, agencies, consultancies to work globally with large organisations? Is it not now just the top, you know, the big three, the big four, the top ten?
I think there's huge opportunity for smaller firms. I think one of the challenges that all firms will face is the client schizophrenia about what they want from consultants. You know, a typical client will say, I have just discovered that our main rivals have introduced new miracle solution X, and the only thing we hate more than our competitors is new miracle solution X. So what we want you to do is to come in and produce miracle solution Y. Now, of course, this must resemble miracle solution X a bit, but it mustn't be exactly the same as miracle solution X. In fact, it must be something that's never been invented before. Can you do that? Can you do that at risk as of today? We won't pay you anything until it's actually, you know, giving us some money on stream in the future. Now, there isn't a single firm on earth, big or small, that can answer every single aspect of that requirement. Indeed, the client will also say, if you claim to have everyone under your roof to be able to solve this, we have a counterclaim. Our issue is enormously complicated, but for every segment of this problem, we want the best person in the world. So, in a sense, what digital affords smaller firms is the opportunity to brigade together to work with other bits of the value chain adjacent to their area of specialism, to thread themselves together and wrap themselves around that incredibly complex client need. It's very challenging, as you know at Ludic, managing an effective and quality assured ecosystem isn't easy, but I think digital makes it that bit easier. We've got more information now on who those are who are adjacent to us in the value chain. There are opportunities to crowdsource insight, to bring in insight from all over the world, so that there's that incredible opportunity there.
And I think clients are more open to purchasing in that way. It isn't the de facto choice just to go for a well-known brand. They may actually go and research and look and find organisations smaller but with more expertise.
I think they're open to it. Whether they're good at it, I think, is a different thing. Procurement, three consultants are gathered together and it's been the best part of 25 minutes before the P word has come up. I think procurement isn't necessarily the most ambitious bit of organisations. There may be an onus on the consulting community to teach clients the value of this different purchasing model going forward. But as you say, there's a degree of loosening up there. No procurement person, though, ever got fired for hiring a famous name, even if that famous name screwed up. So I think the onus will be to demonstrate that these other ways of doing things are just as likely to create value and innovation.
It's an interesting thing, because the shift to a number of things are always held up by some of the models that are in place already. I think when they started shifting to different types of physical environments and multi-purpose environments, and especially working multi-purpose working environments, firms had a hard time making the shift because their facilities people were doing what's a productivity per square meter type evaluation, which didn't allow the thing to function in multi different ways. And the same is true with the consulting business model. You've got procurement buying numbers based on averages of transformation projects and other expertise, hourly rates and so on. And yet there may even be a shift to a per seat model, like software model. People may buy consulting the way they buy software in the future. And these all things need to be tackled. Do you think the big, large brands, even with their reputations, will be around 10 years from now in the same sort of shape that they are today?
Well, having just decried clairvoyance as the as the presumption of consulting, I'm not going to answer that question exactly. I think if they are to be so, they'll have to be very different creatures. And I suppose one of the challenges for larger organizations is to ask the question, where do we sit in the digital value chain? If you've got big organizations who can provide great analytic capability and may potentially move into professional services and advisory, and I'm talking about Google and Amazon, they have extravagantly deep pockets and can invest in bespoke capabilities of their own that may outstrip even the very largest of advisory businesses. By the same token, there are new kids on the block, bedroom-based businesses that are providing exciting applications that are quite cheap, that may scale quite rapidly. Where in the spectrum between those extremes of scale and newness will the incumbents sit? Actually, I have to say that some of them are wrestling with those debates quite effectively. And I think the degree to which they reinvent themselves as a brand in which many multiple functions sit and collaborate may be the way that they move forward. But I also think it will be wise of them, and I see the wisest of them doing this, to partner with smaller specialists. My hunch is that they will struggle to take on the digital giants, but they may, because of their client base and their understanding of business need, be effective gateways and managers of value in the way that some of the smaller firms are able to create it through them, with them, and alongside them.
I mean, we've seen, you know, all kinds of strange investment decisions coming from some of the larger organizations, trying to get into design thinking by purchasing design organizations, trying to get into multimedia and coming down market into by purchasing media organizations. And you can understand that in terms of spreading the risk, but of course, story after story after story emerges of these small design organizations having the guts ripped out of them, and as they're forced to comply with the restrictions and the policy restrictions that the large incumbents endure.
Well, I think it would be wiser for them to partner than to acquire.
Yeah.
I don't always see huge value created, as you say, through some of those acquisitions. Yeah. I also think
I can't see the logic.
I think there's a kind of Harrod's philosophy: put everything under one roof. And there's also perhaps a more legitimate concern about quality management. I think anyone who creates an ecosystem is faced with that challenge immediately. And I don't just mean in terms of the standard that is provided for clients in terms of the service and value. I mean, in some cases, things like ethos. Are you an ethical organization? Do you commit to a particular vision of sustainability? Are there certain things you will do and won't do? And I think the moment you are engaged in that multilateral way of delivering, one of your partners may have dirty little secrets that cause you problems in terms of your own ethical aspirations. It may be that some of what they're trying to do is about neutralizing some of that risk. But while I understand that, I actually think that the future of capitalism is going to be through value-creating alliances rather than highly valuable sole monoliths that attempt to do everything.
We agree. I mean, Paul and I have written about tribes and the tribalism, and we're very fuzzy concept of who is aligned to a tribe, who comes to your flag. And that could be people you employ directly, and it could be people who simply align and associate with your values. You might not necessarily have an exchange relationship with them at all. But there will be an increasingly large number of people flocking to your flag and being part of your tribe, and whatever that stands for. We talk about leadership, and this goes for consulting tribes. Subscribing to a set of values and creating a movement around those. And then like-minded networks will align with those in order to try and get things done.
Speaking of tribes, so one of the things fascinates me is we're talking about consulting moving back to an expert model, essentially, where process work, analytical work is done digitally. Currently, the large advisory practices are some of the biggest graduate recruiters in the UK, at least. And
non-graduates. I mean, some of the consultancies are now bringing in non-graduates.
Right. So my question then is, How do you get into consulting? Would you want to get into consulting? Because the path perhaps isn't a 20, 21-year-old leaving a history degree or a geography degree or an economics degree and just going into management consultancy. Where's their expertise to take them on a career there?
I think it's a very exciting time to come into consulting because there are plenty of opportunities to engage with a very wide range of business challenges quite early in your career. I also think that, I mean, one of the things that the consulting community that I used to work with at the MCA was concerned to do was to raise the status of consulting. Sometimes you talk to young consultants in focus groups who would say, yeah, it's great going on these management training courses in consulting because it'll serve me really well for when I eventually get a real job. And actually, consulting, being an advisor, benefits hugely from people moving client side at various stages in their career. But it is a vocation in its own right. I just think the nature of that vocation is changing. Some of those scale models of recruitment that you were describing, Paul, I think will end up, and this will be valuable, but it will end up being managed services approaches, actually helping clients embed some of the things that Ludic might have suggested that they do, but might not necessarily itself have the scale to deliver those. They become a delivery engine, and that's perfectly legitimate. Whether it is consulting per se is another matter. I think that if you have relied in your consulting model on a comparatively small number of experts supported by a vast army of analysts poring over data, and those vast armies are no longer needed in the future, you will get smaller centres of advisory expertise. But you may be needed on the implementation side of things and actually, you know, helping to do that. I know where I'd want to sit in all of that because the prospect of being on the implementation side fills me with dread in terms of how boring that might be, but that's just me. There are, you know, people who want to get their hands dirty in it. But I think if you're looking for real insight in consulting, there will certainly be places on the graduate schemes of those large firms to find it. I don't doubt that. And there will be opportunities of that sort. But I think there will also be opportunities for people who are looking at firms like Ludic, other innovators in this area, to say, actually, I'm going to commit to that. I'm going to commit to something that's a bit different and that's exciting in the future. The other thing, of course, I think is that it depends upon what matters to you. Are you interested in, you know, engaging with a particular sector, doing digital in a particular area, or do you want to be one of the decision makers of the future? Do you want to influence the direction of travel of a firm? I would say self-evidently, you're more likely to be doing that if you're in a smaller organization than in one of the large corporate structures.
I take a slightly different view on from the socio-technical one, where you've got consultancies advising the large groups to kind of make things happen and bring change. I think there's also within the digital sphere a way, I will use the word quantum, but a way more harmonic kind of essence of the role of consultancy within the field. I think we're seeing the idea of laboratories, small consultancies which operate in a particular way because they have the ability and the economics and the scale to really be innovative, as you suggest. And they create ways of working and patterns, new patterns of working, getting things done, which then in some way connect to the larger systems and infect them virally with new patterns and new ways of doing things. And so you have innovation labs, not only of content, but also of process and technology, which are in some ways acting as small systems on larger systems to bring change to happen. And these are now, we're able to do this. Paul talks about the, what's that rudder called on the bottom of the large tanker? The trim tab. So you have a trim tab, which is a rudder on a large rudder, which changes the direction of a large ship. And these things can exist now in ways they were never able to exist in the past because we've got this hyperconnectivity. And everybody, but that requires a different way of thinking about the world and thinking about how the world works.
I think that's really exciting, though, isn't it? The notion that you can have a benign bacillus that you infect organizations with and they're fundamentally changed by it.
Yeah.
But almost to act as a counter to that, I think sitting alongside those are really some really quite traditional consultants who've played a pretty good game in managing the digital age. One of the problems that I think you see with small generalist consulting firms is they see digital and they think, oh my God, we must do something digital. And they end up grafting something onto the side of themselves, acquiring a team, merging with something else. And unlike your benign infection, it doesn't take.
Yes.
And it also dilutes the differentiation of the firm. The client says, you used to be a really good change firm. Now you've attached some digital to yourself. We don't know what you are.
What are you? Where's your identity? Yeah.
Some of the wiser ones are saying, we are unrepentantly just change managers. But look at our exciting mates who can come in and do some digital analysis for you, or who may be some of those incredibly imaginative disruptors. They're saying we can work with them, but we're still about change. And I think that's very wise. And I think it allows two things to happen. The consulting market is then diversified by the entry of those new disruptors with their different way, while also perhaps having, in some cases where it's needed, some seasoned gatekeepers who know the conservatism of certain British boards, who might need to be shown this, who might need to see this brought to life, but have it brought to life for them in a context where a relationship they already have with a seasoned organisation they trust is enhanced through the introduction to some of those disruptors you describe.
So there will be an ecosystem of these expertise, pockets of expertise, but still requires orchestration. But particularly, I guess, when working with any multinational firm these days where they are working across borders, across time zones, a lot of SMEs by nature are single national-based focused companies. So the coordination of that becomes more and more complicated.
I think it does. And I think making judgments about the relevance of each element of this for clients who may not have the understanding of those bits and pieces is a critical role. I think there will, for quite some time yet, be almost an interpretative role for consultants to say, this is what it means for you, this is how it's going to impact you. Now, of course, firms like yours can bring that to life in highly visual, highly dynamic ways. But some of this will still remain incomprehensible to a CEO saying, show me the money. What does it mean in terms of the bottom line? And some more seasoned consultants can say, it's terribly exciting and it means this.
That's right. If you're a board member and you're making board decisions, one of the problems in the past is you would make great strategic decisions and then spend 2 years on a road trip trying to get the strategy into the organization. Hopefully it shifts before the next strategy comes along. We know now, today, that you can make strategic decisions and you can get your network and organization impacted overnight if you know what you're doing with digital. I mean, one of the things Paul and I set up, I mean, it's been 15 years now, but we set up Ludic to answer the exam question of, instead of bringing large groups of people and flying them in to make huge decisions, and 200 people, vast expense for a week in a, you know, highly impactful environment, how can we do that online? And how can we achieve the same results that we achieved by bringing people together in this way online? And then how can we have a long tail so that instead of the decay of and excitement of making decisions, you actually start the job and keep the work happening? There's a profoundly different way of approaching things, and it's part of the, you know, stuff that make Ludic exciting for me and how we get done what we're doing. But we do think that there are certain shifts in the philosophy that are required. And as you said, not all CEOs get that. CEO is making an investment decision, wants to show me the money and show me the impact. And what we're trying to say is, well, if you want the impact, you want to get, you know, you've got to use different ways of thinking to get different outcomes. Part of that philosophy, we think, is constructivism. Your people will buy into what they build and be part of it. Collaborative authoring, large groups of people doing it for themselves and not, as you say, you know, the experts coming in as the great I am. Having the tools that everybody can use and the language systems that are required to kind of make these shifts, and then having ready access to experts on an as-needed basis. So that's where it goes. But it's a kind of bottom-up approach and a different way of thinking. And we also think it's highly visual, you know, lots of visual in media.
I think that's right, and I think it's going to change the look and feel of capitalism going forward. Mm. I mean, I'm the only person in this podcast, Garrick, who's wearing a suit, and that's to do with where I'm going next. Sure. I mean, Paul, I don't think even has any socks on. So, and I think that, you know, the look and feel of British capitalism is changing, but it's changing slowly. I mean, I remember talking to consultants 4 or 5 years ago, and they said, we really want to get people into the industry who don't resemble us. And if they're multiply pierced and multiply tattooed and they wear torn Metallica t-shirts, all the better. And I said, are you going to show them to your financial services clients? Right. And they said, probably not yet. Now, they're saying, actually, we do take them into the big financial services providers in the city because we regard it as a controlled explosion. Because the people say, if you bring someone in here who looks like that, you must know what you're talking about. Sure. And I think that we're getting a kind of relaxation. It's a generational thing, the commanding heights.
And I think people in Metallica t-shirts can now speak the language of business. I mean, if you think of the history of British interaction with the arts and industry in the arts, all the way to the APG group and some of the phenomenal history we've had, largely failures because many people from different walks of life didn't speak the language of business. That's not true anymore. And you're getting people who are able to understand both controlled explosive thinking and what they're dealing with in terms of business context, and able to meld the two and be disruptive in a powerful and effective way.
And we're 20 years into a process in which that model of, you know, obviously it's parodied in terms of the Shoreditch model, the Google working environment with loads of table tennis tables and everyone being really very informal. Actually, that's older now, and I think it's starting to become the paradigm. It's still the case, though, that there are some dominant conservative voices in many British corporations. Sure. But they will die out, and we will have new generations coming in who will say, I come into this with no baggage about how things were done in the past. Yeah. Let's throw it all up in the air and start again. And I think digital allows ways of doing that. It allows you to graduate quickly towards wholly new ways of doing stuff. The challenge for consulting, therefore, is to move away from merely being a kind of process-improving analysis industry that can say, your great big corporation of X can improve this much, into being the imaginative people who say, do you realize you could wholly reinvent what you do and be even more successful than you are today?
You talk about the reinvention of capitalism, and do you see the role of consultants in that job that now has to be addressed? Can you talk a little bit more about that?
I think some of them are probably, in terms of their working environments, a bit too hand-to-mouth, looking at the next opportunity, necessarily to think in those philosophical terms, but they'll be part of it. I mean, I think one of the things that digital has done that's perhaps underappreciated in certain parts of the value chain is the enormous empowerment it's given to consumers. Consumers now can complain incredibly visibly about their service. If you're a bank and your ATMs fail, woe betide you if Stephen Fry is one of your clients, because it'll be
an airline.
Absolutely. And I think that empowerment means that somebody at some point is going to make a lot of changes and potentially a lot of money by using that power, using those perspectives, almost to play both sides of the equation.
The feedback loops are instantaneous now, and we are seeing engagement and reaction That's how shifts are happening.
We asked at the start of this, does consulting have a future? It seems it may. In that future, Paul, maybe if I start with you, what do you imagine being some of the characteristics of the future of consulting?
Well, if I were looking at a firm, I think I'd look for five critical things. I think they should be well networked. I think that it's very unlikely that even the largest consulting firm is going to be able to answer all of the questions that a client poses. So they need to be part of an ecosystem. I'd like that ecosystem to have great values. I think one of the things that's been really apparent in the last 20 years or so is that capitalism needs to change in its values. I think the demands of young people for sustainability, for work-life balance, the fact that they're not always as interested in owning physical objects and so on is asking some pretty fundamental questions here. So a value-driven proposition, I think, will need to be in consulting as well. I think there'll need to be a sort of humility in consultants too, a recognition that it's very unlikely that any firm will have all of the answers to all of the questions. The issue will be, are they plugged in through their network to people who might be able to answer it? But also, do they have the next capability, which is creativity and imagination? If you've got that, there's the prospect, I think, that you can unlock some future value for clients. So that's networked consultants, value-driven, humility and creativity. But the final one, the fifth one I'd look for, and it needn't necessarily be manifest in physical characteristics, it's about outlook, is youthfulness. That's not just, you know, them necessarily being young people, but that permanent thing which even seasoned people, the great thing about I'm a Liverpool supporter, so it pains me to say this, but one of the great things about Alex Ferguson was his great ability to reinvent himself. You know, by the time he was 70, he was still the youngest person on the Carrington training pitch. That capacity for reinvention and permanent youthfulness, I think, will characterise the great advisors of the future.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you. Garrick, what do you think?
Well, I'm not going to answer the Liverpool question at all, because that's going to keep us here for some time. But given that there's an Everton supporter in the room as well, but carrying on. I think there are five characteristics, and you won't be surprised that there are some that are similar to Paul's. But essentially, I think the future of consulting is that it's platform-based technology, which allows people to make changes instantaneously from strategic decision-making to shifting the shape of the networks of organizations that make up the value chain. I think tools and apps will be delivered and created on a daily basis that enable people to make these changes. And I believe that the future of organization, which is for another podcast, is what we call adaptability, where apps and software suites are the way that organizations will be controlled and play out, in which creates a different playing field, if you like. Plug and play expertise, that means you get the expert when you need them, playing into Paul's idea of networks of experts, but plug and play expertise. The two others I have are collaborative authoring of outcomes. I think there's a philosophical shift that's brought about by digital, where people are building from the bottom up and people are making the changes themselves from within the organization. So you get rid of the not invented here syndrome once and for all, and things are constructivist. And I think tribes meeting tribes. Tribes of consultants flocking to a flag meet tribes of organizations who are trying to deliver certain outcomes into the market. And that is an ecosystem, and fundamentally that is defined by values.
Thank you, Garrick. And thank you especially, Paul Connolly, for joining us on this conversation. It's been a pleasure to speak with you.
My pleasure. Really enjoyable.
Thank you for listening. This has been a Ludic Insights podcast. Join us next time to hear more Ludic Insights, and please don't forget to subscribe.